Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back with Kyle, of course, to talk about another episode of Bitter or Better, the First Jurors Impact. And this time we are going with seasons 11 through 15. I think we have some other B words coming in for some of these jurors. I think we might. We might have the return of basic. I know Kyle has some other words in store, but
not what you're thinking.
Yeah,
not the B word you're thinking.
But I'm excited to dive into some of these seasons, because here we have some jurors that were pre-merge, and we've been talking about up till now. You know, the what if the first boot of the merge was the first juror. Now we're even going past that and are like, all right, so you didn't even see half the people. All right, cool. You're on the jury now. So we got some good things to talk about in this episode.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to get into this grouping, because this is kind of the stretch in Survivor. I don't think it's the best stretch in Survivor, but it's the one that kind of leads us into the best stretch of Survivor. And it really does set the trajectory of the game more on this strategic aspect. This is the era where we really start seeing a shift in the dynamic of the juries, what the juries are looking for out of there. We're kind of gone with like the true, or we're not completely gone with like trust and integrity and all that jazz.
You're never free of that.
We're never free of it. However, it does seem like this is where there seems to be a little more emphasis on the strategic game while incorporating the social game. And I believe I said it last week. I've done a lot of podcasts lately, so I can't remember if I said it on this podcast last week. But the social game and the strategic game are very tightly aligned. And I think this is the era of Survivor where we really start seeing that play into effect. And I think these five seasons, which start off with this, like, first time thing going on in Guatemala with these two captains coming in, and ironically we get a captain as a mayor of Ponderosa and a captain sitting at Final Tribal Council, and I think that really does set a tone for how this next set of seasons goes.
Yeah. So you already kind of started the conversation, so let's dive right into Guatemala. We have Bobby John as our first juror in Guatemala. And his boot episode pretty much revolves around him, his relationship with Jamie, or lack thereof, and Gary finding the idol and then playing it to save himself there, because it was a toss-up between Gary and Bobby John going home. There's no wiggle room. Stephanie is like, well, at least you made the jewelry for Bobby John, and like gave him that much, but other than that, like he didn't have. He's just Bobby John, and he doesn't change his game. He just is, because he didn't get a chance to, I feel like, just fully digest what he needed to do, because Oolong just got decimated. So what else is there for Bobby John to do? Because he thinks his game is fine because he just lost a whole bunch. So here he is as our first juror.
Yeah, Bobby John, he does set an interesting tone. And John, you mentioned it, that we have a returnee as the mayor of Ponderosa. And one of Bobby John's things was that he really wanted to just make the jury. And in the merge episode, he's like pleading to Stephanie, just let me make the jury, please. And she does that. Now, he is the next voted out, but she at least lived up to her word in that respect. And he's even saying, like, she's telling him, you're not going home tonight, right? Like, you would want to give him, like, there's no reason to lie to him. Like, I think Bobby John would respect that. But the thing is, she really wasn't, because who would have thought Gary was going to find that idol without a clue? It was supposed to be Gary, but he finds the idol. And then at that point at Tribal Council, it's like, well, Bobby John, like, sorry. So it doesn't set Stephanie off on a good tone. It's a worse tone for Stephanie, I think, more so than is Bobby John setting the tone. But I think that was just like unfortunate circumstance that set Stephanie's tone off on the wrong way going into the merge.
I really think Bobby John being this, like the Mara Ponderosa for Guatemala, really does kind of set the tone for this final tribal council in a way that we don't really realize, because Bobby John has ridden to the end of a game with Stephanie before, right? As far as he could with Oolong before having to face off head to head in fire, is back because of that entire storyline and doesn't vote for Stephanie in the end. And I think that's really important. I think it's really important that we have him coming in here, the person who legitimately knows Stephanie the best out of everyone, mm-hmm. not voting for her at the end. And even after like acknowledging the fact that Stephanie's legitimately the reason he's there, right? Mm-hmm. The storyline with Oolong, with Stephanie becoming America's sweetheart, is the reason why Bobby John is brought back on this season, because he was the other person who happened to make it to the end of Oolong with her. And him, someone who really puts a lot of reliance into a social game. I think Bobby John doesn't have a good social game, but I think he really does kind of has those like Southern boy charms.
Terrible
one. He doesn't have a terrible one.
Him and Jamie, man.
Yeah. Really, it's like 99% of the time he's good. And then 1% of the time he's an absolute maniac.
But I think like he puts a lot of value into actual relationships in the game, which is something you wouldn't really understand just watching his pull-out game, and you get it a lot more in his Guatemala game. And because of that, I think it really does emphasize Stephanie's kind of descent into villainy that we see in Guatemala.
And to play off of that, in this in his boot episode is the reward challenge that Jamie ultimately wins and then sacrifices his spot so everybody can have a better meal. But in that, Bobby John is like, all right, so I don't want to gorge and pig out. I want to be respectful here, because he gets called into the cool kids table and he knows people like Gary don't want to see what's going on. And we get a flash to Gary of just like staring daggers, and they're like, oh, Gary, what's wrong? And he's just like enjoying the view. But Bobby John like recognizes things like this of, we have to be respectful here. Yes, we got this luxury and we're going to utilize it, but we're not going to, you know, sit here and just be like, oh, another round, sir. But Judd is also there and Stephanie is there, and they don't have that thought or realization to be a bit more humble about this reward and just kind of eat what you want, drink what you want, and then go back to camp.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking about was that, yes, Bobby John and Stephanie were like, you know, they made it to the final two of Oolong, but they really didn't like work that closely together on Oolong. I was looking at the voting chart right now. They really only vote together like three times throughout all of Oolong. Like there's a couple of tie votes in there where they're voting opposite ways. So really, they just make it to the end by circumstance.
They're the strongest, or viewed to be the strongest.
They're the strongest. They just
Did you make that deal towards the end of Oolong when there's like four of them left and then into three of them left?
Yeah, I think but so. They didn't have a thing from beforehand. And Bobby John and Danny worked way closer in Guatemala than Bobby John and Stephanie ever did in Palau. Like Bobby John and Danny make that Blake move together. They're really, really tight, and they're the main decision makers throughout the pre-merge of Nakum. So I think all of that put together with Danny not breaking her word, him having this history with Stephanie and her kind of being like, you know, the villain, of the face of the majority that's picking them off, like all of that together props Danny up a lot.
And you would think that Bobby John would be a bitter juror, and I honestly don't think he is, based on his question that he gives at Final Tribal Council, basically acknowledging Stephanie and saying that I'm here because of you. Thank you for, you know, allowing me to at least be a part of the jury. And then says, how proud are you of the game that you played? And asked that same question to both of the final tribal councilists. And I think that's a great question to ask. And it just shows how they can, you know, stand on their games. And I would have expected after some of his explosive tendencies within the season that he might be a bit more of an explosive juror, and he was not.
Maybe it's a hot take, but I think Bobby John was actually in a better position to win this season than Stephanie was coming into it. Because Stephanie got all the attention and like all the hype of being America's sweetheart, she had this reputation she had to live up to, and it almost feels like she just throws it away in Guatemala, right? Like she decides, no, you know what? That's not me. I'm just going to be me. Whereas we look at Bobby John, we don't get a lot of Bobby John in Panama, or sorry, in Palau. And then we get no Bobby John in Panama. We don't get a lot of him in Palau. Like he's like, okay, here's this generic guy who's just on this decimated tribe. But in what we get from him in Guatemala, you see these things about like why Survivor casting would want to cast him in the first place. And he does feel like a real genuine person. There are a lot of people on this cast who feel like characters, right? We've mentioned a lot of them already with Stephanie,
Judd,
Jamie, right? Even like to some extent, like Lydia, Rafe, like they have these roles, but Bobby John really feels like the most genuine of this group of people, I think. And I think that really does play into how he approaches this jury question. And I really like these type of reflective jury questions where this question of just like, how proud of your game are you? Really does demonstrate a lot of how the players not only are thinking about themselves and like their own outside game views on the game itself, but also strategically how they think about the game. I just think this is a really good way of approaching the final jury.
Yeah, I also think that this is a good example of someone who like has their mind made up, but is doing it in a really like fair way. Yep. Like he's giving Stephanie the chance to like prop herself up. He's not berating her. He's not asking her a question that's going to like put her on the spot. He's giving her a good question. So maybe it'll convince other people on the jury, even though he already, you know, has his mind made up.
Yeah. Anything else you would like to say about Bobby John before we get to the actual merge boot?
I don't think so. The thing is, it's like, despite the fact that this is a returning player season with Bobby John, and we get more him than we did in Palau, it still doesn't feel like we get a lot of Bobby John in this season because of those aforementioned characters, right? The characters on this season are so big, they kind of drown out someone like Bobby John.
Mm. All right. Talk about a character on the season. Brandon Bellinger. He was he was the merge boot this season. And honestly, nothing would change if he was the first juror here. I think he just quietly votes for Danny and sees himself out.
Yeah, I would just be a little happier. That's the only thing that would change if Brandon Bellinger was a juror in Survivor.
I agree. So Bobby John, a better juror?
I would say so.
Yeah, I would say so. And this is a bitter jury, by the way. Like yeah. this, there was a lot of bitter people on this jury, but Bobby John was not one of them. And I think he did his best to try and, you know, make it a little bit fairer the best way he can.
It kind of feels like it was that original Yashaw tribe that was really the bitter group. And I guess it's actually more like the Swap Nakum tribe, really.
Yeah, right? It's definitely the Swap Nakum tribe. Yeah. Cindy and Judd.
Yeah, that really felt more bitter. They're swaps. It's confusing sometimes. That felt bitter, but it felt like the people who weren't on a tribe with Stephanie weren't working with Stephanie were the ones who could kind of be a little more graceful towards her in this, but still refused to vote for her.
Stephanie was in a tough situation here where it's like you had those people who were on the bottom, they were so tight and going for each other, and then all of her alliance that she pissed off on the way out, like very bad combination there.
Yeah.
All right. So moving into Panama, where we have Bobby Mason and not Bobby John. he did make the merge. Austin Carty is our merge boot here. And he had a lot going wrong for himself that he caused in that episode. I think there could have been a shot that Danielle maybe sticks with him a little bit longer if he doesn't say, hey, I dog that challenge. I'm actually physically peak and in my prime. So just keep me in the game. And then you're like, why? But okay. So he just puts his foot in his mouth the entire episode and he realizes, oh crap, I shouldn't have done that. That's not a great idea. But the bonding time that him and Danielle have on Exile really could have solidified something to maybe get one more boot further. But he just, the whole first half of the episode was just terrible.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that I don't know if Austin really sets a tone, because like his last time in the game was spent with Danielle on Exile, and when they come back, they're talking about how brutal it was and how like bonded they were because of it. Then he votes for Aris at the end, and he and Aris were not particularly close. Like, he's calling Aris a slime ball on his way out. So to me, that wasn't consistent. That didn't click for me. So I'm interested or intrigued at how Austin was really looking at the game.
Well, I think there's something really interesting about that, because we don't really get that from Austin that much in the edit. We get a lot from Danielle in the edit, talking about how the
this is true.
And it probably is an editing thing to make us think that Danielle should be able to get Austin's vote at the end of the game. I imagine. But Austin's in such a weird position, because we don't talk about Panama being a pagonging all that much, but it's a pagong. It's just a straight up pagonging with, oh man, Terry happens to keep winning all the way to the end. But other than that, it's just a pagonging. And Austin is in a situation where, yes, he makes this really dumb decision to tell everyone he threw the challenge when he was one of two people who were going to go home. Like, I don't know what you're thinking there, Austin, but okay. And that makes it so people won't trust him. He immediately recognizes that. He gets sent to Exile Island, so he isn't even given an opportunity to build his social game back up. And on top of that, he is the biggest male threat. Or he is the biggest threat outside of Terry on the opposing side of this dominant alliance that is the Kasaya Six.
I think one of the main reasons why he probably votes for Aris is because it's a game most similar to one that he would want to play, or that he tried to play. Yeah. And so that might be, you know, his avenue for voting for Aris, because, you know, he tried to pull in Danielle for this one boot and she didn't want to do it. And like, that's their only connection. And then she, you know, squandered that connection maybe. But then Aris, you know, played that game that he might want to have played.
This is a tough one, because I don't think that this is a final two that anybody on the jury was really excited to vote for, outside of maybe Suri. Like, nobody was thrilled to see these two people here. So, you know, they were probably, Austin was like probably spending the whole time hoping that, you know, Terry gets to the end.
Terry. Yeah.
So that was the whole tone of the season. Terry gets to the end, he wins, and he doesn't get there. So then it's like, all right, I mean, I don't know, Aris, like, we started on the same tribe together.
Oh, hey, you forgot about that.
They didn't even like Aris. So,
yeah, his weird
But Ken, I think you bring up a really good point that we haven't really talked about, because it hasn't really been able to be talked about in the jurors we've discussed so far.
Right.
Sometimes it's important to get someone on the jury who's just similar to you. Right. And I think it's something that people forget about when they play the game of Survivor a lot of the time, is that the jury is going to vote for someone that they see plays the game that they were intending to play. And I think you're very correct, McKenna, when you say that there's this parallel between Austin and Aris here, where it is this idea, like, you know, they're both younger men. I think Austin sees himself more in Aris than he does in Danielle. And I think that is probably what motivates him to vote for Aris in the end. And especially when you keep in mind that, like, you would, because it can't be challenge prowess, right? Because if it was challenge prowess that was going on, yes, Aris won more challenges than Danielle did, but Danielle won the challenge that beat Terry. So if I think if someone was going into this tribal council being like, okay, I'm going to vote for Terry because he's like dominating all these challenges and making it to the end, or, you know, he's on my side of things, because we can't ignore the fact that that is a motivator for votes in Survivor sometimes. If that's the case, then logically, I think Austin would be voting for Danielle as the person who upended Terry, right? But he doesn't. He does vote for Aris. And I think that does come from the like personal experience of it all. Just like being closer to Aris as a person than he is to Danielle.
Yeah, we also had Danielle make a deal with Terry with the, you know, he'll teach her fire. Mm-hmm. And then if she wins immunity, she'll take him. She didn't. So I'm sure that didn't make the Laminas very happy, you know. So that contributed to the tone probably.
And I would have liked to see Austin go further in this season, because as I was watching the immunity challenge, Austin was last to finish the fence dig, but he was first to finish the brain teaser and do the net course, which I was like, wait, so you're physical and sneaky smart too? That's could be like amazing to watch in future challenges. Who someone who could upend Terry, he just hadn't had, you know, the right challenge yet to do that. And imagine like Terry, Austin, and Aris vying for the immunity necklace. We might see a little bit more interesting gameplay if Austin does make it further in the game.
Too bad there was just a block of six people voting against him.
Yeah. So for his jury speech, he congratulated them. He asks for one good move and one not so good move that helped them get to the final tribal council. So, or that got them there. So it, you know, gives you an opportunity to boost your game, but also realize some of your faults in the game as well.
It's a good question. I think, you know, it's somewhat similar to Bobby John, just with the added layer of give me something that you're not proud of. You know, it's a good non-specific question, right? It's like one that you will not remember until, you know, you're doing something like this and you get to you're reminded of what he asked. I was surprised, I guess, like someone like him.
In the middle with that.
Right in the middle. Yep. That he does seem to think about the game. Like I think that his mind was in the game. He does think about things. He does. It's not always the right things, admitting you through the challenge, but I was surprised it wasn't a little bit more like strategy specific or gameplay specific.
Yeah. I think part of it comes down to like the situation he's in towards the end here. Like of his game, right. Where it's just like, I think when you're fighting for your life in the game, it gets a little harder to be fully invested in the gameplay of it all. But I do think this question, like I said with Bobby John and like Kyle, you just said, right, it's a reflective question. And I think reflective questions are a lot better as final jury questions, because it gives, I think it can lower the guard of the final tribal council's members or those participating in the final tribal council. I think it really is like an instance where it's like, okay, I want you to reflect on you. And I know, for me, like, I really want to see that growth. I think growth is a big part of Survivor, and everyone will have their own style of growth, but I want to know how it impacts you going into this. So I think him asking this question, like you said, McKenna, props people up, but also lets them be reflective on themselves and gives them an opportunity to really showcase who they are in this final tribal council setting. Is it the most exciting question in the world? No. But does it get the job done? I think so.
Yeah, so Austin, a basic juror, better juror. He's definitely not bitter, but he is just kind of there.
I'd say basic. Yeah. You know, he's not harmful. He's neutral to fine. Yeah.
But Nick Stanberry, what could have changed if that man was the first juror?
Oh boy. Maybe that much, right there. That's how much that would have changed. Yeah. So before we got on here, McKenna alluded to it. My new B word, bland. That would be Nick Stanberry.
Kyle, we don't get a bland jury until Kageyan.
You're right. Yeah, Nick, I mean, I don't know. He was out there for the experience. You know, it seemed like he was, I don't think much would have changed.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. I think it's, him and Austin are carbon copies of each other.
I can quote Austin. I can't quote Nick.
Yeah, I think Austin was definitely like the bigger character, but in terms of what would have changed in the game, like nothing would have changed.
All right, let's head on down to Cook Islands with Brad Verratta as our first juror, but also he had two more other jurors after him that were also pre-merge, which is crazy to think. And he votes for Yule, someone who he had spent the first little bit of the game with. And then, you know, he didn't get to... He had Becky there with him too, but if Yule is looked at as the more strategic of the duo, then he's going for Yule. He hadn't even met Ozzy aside from when Ozzy busts into camp and been like, oh, so this is the island, and challenges. So starting this jury when we haven't hit the merge and Ozzy hasn't been able to have his one conversation with you before he, you know, sends you home. I don't know. It's a rough start to the jury and to a winning game.
Yeah, this is tough because we get three pre-merge jurors and two of them were from Yule and Becky's original tribe. Here. Mm-hmm. So Ozzy hadn't met these two, and if Sundra had won Firemaking against Becky, then Brad and Jenny wouldn't have met two out of the three finalists.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and we're in a situation where with four tribes on a season, you could theoretically have, like, depending on swaps and whatever, you could have never met the entire final three, mm-hmm. which can't be allowed, in my opinion. You look like you have a thought, John.
I have a thought. Well, it's just this is our first jury with more than seven people, correct?
I think you're right.
And that has to be one of those like red flags for you when you're in the game. It's like the jury has never started before the merge before. Why is this?
We're not at that point in Survivor yet. We're not at that point to be like Spencer and Caglione being like 1, 2, 3, wait a second.
Right.
Like,
no, yeah. But it's just, there are these weird things about this that like, there were hints that this should have been, that you should have, these players maybe should have known that a final three was coming because it didn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But how would they have known?
I know.
Ten person jury. Yeah.
They also had to navigate a twist in every single day of the game in Cook Island. So I don't blame them. Brad as a juror, I don't think there was any chance Brad was voting for anyone other than Yule in this instance.
No way, because Yule was the only one he knew.
I think that B word might apply here as well.
There's not much I can really say about Brad's game, right? Because he doesn't do much this season.
Well,
he gets seven confessionals in. Eight episodes. So yeah, you don't really know where Brad's head is at outside of when he's with Yule. And it's like that's what you remember from Brad. And then he's just kind of there.
Brad so it's gets like that bad win taken out of him.
He gets a bad one taken out by Cowboy. If only Cowboy was in the final three, then we know where Brad's vote is going. But yeah, there's no other story to Brad.
Brad's vote out episode, the entire thing is we're voting out Brad because he's schemy and Nate lost trust with Brad because Brad is saying like, it's everybody for themselves. And he's just saying things that are like catching people weird where it's like Parvati's like, it's not really an individual game yet. It's even when you make the merge, it's not totally individual. You still need trust. And so he's just doing things unknowingly, unlike Austin, who knowingly put his foot in his mouth. Brad was like unknowingly saying the wrong things to just like irk people, but then we think Brad is safer around because Penner mutinies over there, and everybody can understand why Candace did it. But Penner is evil and a rat and a cancer and all that, because he mutinied. But then it was like, wait, I think we still need to go Brad. We can always go Jonathan later. Brad could connect with Yule again at Emerge, where Jonathan's not going to. So they think Brad is the optimal boot here. And he is blindsided at his boot. And he said, this has been the best, worst experience of his life.
Remind me, is his boot episode the one where he decides to do the puzzle instead of swimming?
No, it's the one.
Is that the episode after that? Yeah, okay.
The one after.
I think what's really interesting with analyzing this jury in particular is because the main storyline of Cook Islands becomes the I-24. Obviously, it's not the main storyline of the season, but it is the one that we talk about openly in public. But because of that, there is only one member of that entire tribe on this jury. And the other, like the everyone else on this jury is Rero. And it is a situation where, like, we don't have that type of thing before, right? Even in these seasons where we do have Pagongings, there's at least a couple of people from some of these tribes who stick around and are on the jury. But in this instance, you have Rero just, like, sitting there and trying to figure out, hey, these people who were completely on the opposite side of me, what do we do with them, right? Like, they were in opposition to us, so we have to evaluate their game somehow. And Brad doesn't even get the luxury of having being ousted by them. He's ousted by his fellow jurors instead.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about earlier, Brad at least knows two of the final tribal councilists. Rebecca, mm-hmm. who gets booted right after him, she doesn't know any of them.
Yeah, that's true. I literally said, what if, and Rebecca was right here. Yeah. So you do run into that situation, and she votes for Ozzy, who has the more visible game, right? Mm-hmm. He's winning all the challenges. And what I think we mentioned before is that when you're the first member of the jury, you have like the longest time to think, but you have the least amount of information, and the information mm-hmm. that you're getting is a lot of hearsay from what mm-hmm. everybody else is telling you. And there, it is no more true than in a season where the jury is starting before the merge, where Rebecca has never met these people. And all she has to go off of is what everybody is saying coming out of the game.
Yeah. And, you know, Brad can provide some information on how he feels about Yule and Becky, because he was on a tribe for a little bit with them. But being completely, like, out of Ozzy's gameplay is just, it's so tough for me to, I just don't know why they started pre-merge. Just make a big merge, which we do later in the season. We expand it to 13, or sorry, later in the series. Mm-hmm. But whenever there are pre-merge boots as jurors, I just don't think it is ever good for Survivor.
This season is also kind of bizarre. I know, McKenna, I know you're a big Cook Islands fan.
I am.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
So it's pretty low, but I just think this was the first season with like 20 true players, right? Palau, yes, yeah. but no. So this was the first one with 20, but it's also the latest merge, right? We have 10 rounds of pre-merge. So, or 11, because we started at 9. So a lot of the game happens pre-merge. So you know, it's just a weird dynamic. There's a whole lot of odd going on with this season here in terms of the jury and the merge, the gameplay, all that.
And even if we look past where Brad starts with Yule and Becky on a tribe there, and that he would lean that way, also just like Brad as a player doesn't lean towards the type of gameplay that Ozzy's showing here, right? True. We know that Brad isn't he's very cerebral. The aforementioned, I'm better at puzzles. I'm better at puzzles, right? He values that aspect of the game a lot more than he does the physical side. And I think that is ultimately, other than the fact that he actually knows Yule, ultimately is probably what pushes his vote towards Yule. Because Becky does vote for Ozzy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or not Becky.
Rebecca.
Jenny. Yeah. Jenny.
Oh, and sorry. Jenny. Yeah.
I'm like confusing all of these players today. Jenny is who I was talking about, the third juror, who also didn't make the merge.
Model twist.
Also votes for Ozzy. And so, but she was on that starting tribe with Yule and
Becky.
Yes, five letter names ending in Y. That's so confusing. Jenny was on that tribe with those two, but still ends up voting for Ozzy. So I think that there is this little bit of it where Yule plays his game a lot to the merge, right? Like that's where he plays his game.
Yeah.
Specific jurors there. And I think like once we get into our experiment of like the changes to the jury, like we can talk about that a little bit more there. But I think Brad is in a situation where he's really just voting for, again, like we said with Austin in Panama, the player that is more aligned with the way he would play the game.
Yes.
Or would want to play the game.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
We almost got Brad Verratta in season 50 because we got the Ozzy moment of, in my final tribal council, I talked about how my relationship with my father. Oh, and right. So that is Brad's question. Ozzy, I've only had a 15-second conversation with you. What is the most challenging experience in your life and how did you overcome that? So he just wants to get to know Ozzy a little bit more. For what? I don't know, but just wants to, you know, give Ozzy a bit more of a human side or something, because he kind of already has his mind leaned on Yule. So maybe if I hear something personal about Ozzy plus his gameplay, I could go that way. But this is where Ozzy talks about his relationship with his dad and gets very emotional. So I don't hate this question at all because it is something of like I need something to get to know you because I haven't gotten the chance the entire game and now I'm told maybe I should vote for you.
Mm-hmm. When was their 15-second conversation?
That's what I'm probably trying to figure out. Probably Matt at some point.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
Ozzy came to camp with Flicka and
when they just wandered into camp. Yeah, this is an interesting question because it's setting a different tone than what Brad's real interest is.
Here. Yeah,
it's kind of an odd question. It is good to give Ozzy a chance, someone that you don't know, get some more information. But what I want to know is if he knew how close this jury vote was going to be. Did he know it was going to be 5-4? Because if he did, and he's asking a question to Ozzy, that's going to take votes away from Yule, potentially, the person he actually wants to win. I just think that's interesting. I don't know.
To me, this question actually feels a lot more cerebral than it reads, because you're really evaluating the way Ozzy responds to this. What is Ozzy view as his biggest like, like the most adversity that he's faced, right? And especially a season like Cook Islands, which kind of puts a bit of an emphasis on adversity in a way, right? I think this is a really important question to ask because it shows you how Ozzie's thinking. And, like, I don't think he expected Ozzie to talk about his dad. I don't think he expected Ozzie to go that way and talk about that. I think he expected something, a different response from Ozzie. I think it does kind of catch him off guard the way Ozzie does respond to this. But it does kind of allow you to evaluate someone in a way that you have to quickly when you don't get a chance to know them, right? Like, this is the type of thing that, like, if I ask someone what has been your greatest adversity that you have had to overcome, it really does reveal a lot just by what they say that adversity is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're kicking Brad out. We're kicking Rebecca out. And Denny's got to go too. It's Nate. Nate is now the first juror because he is the merge boot. So the vote count would then wind up being 4-2. Mm-hmm. But does that change at all with Nate being the first juror? Does he advocate? Does he push? Does he do anything to influence anybody to swing one way or the other?
I don't know. He does vote for Ozzie. So if he was the first juror, now you have a pro Ozzie person as your first juror. Now, is that able to counteract all the things that Yul was doing with like Adam and Candace and Penner and sending them to the jury and
Parvati, you know,
Yul, and Parvati. Well, yeah. I mean, Yul has some of the best jury management of all time. So maybe he still wins. Like you said, it's a 4-2 vote. He even gets Sundra's vote, which is surprising to me because Sundra and Ozzie were a little bit closer than Yul and Sundra. So that's an interesting one. I'm going to say no, but you do at least have a little bit of a different tone off the jury here. And then it depends if we have a final two and who's who's that other juror.
Yeah. I think the big thing. Yeah.
If he doesn't win the challenge, then it's Becky.
Presumably, yeah.
No, then it's Yul. No,
then, I don't know. So then it'd be Yul, and then we have a whole different situation. We won't go there. Yeah, we won't go there.
I think there is actually a possibility that Nate being first juror does change things, and it's if only for the fact that that means Candace is going to Ponderosa with only Nate. And with only Nate there, I think Nate can kind of emphasize the fact that Yul kept Jonathan around longer.
Perhaps, I think
there's that little bit there that could come into play, which it doesn't seem like much, but like maybe that makes Candace a little more iffy, and then maybe that makes Adam a little more iffy, and then maybe that makes Parvati a little more iffy, right? I think there's just kind of like this potential cascading effect to it. Does it really matter? Probably not with what Yul is doing on the beach and how much he is playing to the jury. However, there is that slight possibility that just like that alone time between Nate and Candace is enough to sway one more person over to Ozzie's side. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, well, what happens with the other people, especially when that person is Candace, who is very clearly connected with Adam?
Yeah. And then Parvati votes for Ozzie here. So you already have them. And then of the first four jurors, who's the fourth one? It's Penner, who they don't like. And Penner's like, I think Yul should win the game. I like Yul. They're like, well, forget that. We're not doing what you say. Right? And then Adam comes in. It's like, hey, Adam, we're all voting for Ozzie already. So you know what? I have been convinced. Ozzie probably wins the game if Nate is the first juror.
But is Brad bitter or better? Basic?
He's probably basic, but he's better. For the outcome, well, better in the sense that I think he helps create a pro Yul jury. He helps foster that tone because of what we just said. Mm-hmm. Where if Nate was the first juror, then we think it could be a different outcome.
Or if not a pro Yul jury, he at least fosters a community, or he fosters an environment for a neutral jury where everyone is afforded the opportunity to make their own decision.
All right. You heard it here. Brad, better.
Mm-hmm. We also didn't need to talk about Flicka. Thank you for not asking.
why would I? Well, we talked about Fickle a little bit with the camp raid, sort of. But
on to Fiji. Let's talk about a fun jury. The best jury we've ever had.
Sure. With our best ever first juror, Rocky. So he is the first juror this season. And boy, did I enjoy watching this episode of Fiji. he has a similar to Bobby John here, in just one instance of this is the reward where Ravu actually wins, and they go have a bunch of hot dogs, and Rocky's like, please don't engorge in the hot dogs. We can't be crazy here, which is the same thing Bobby John is saying. Yeah. So that's just a wild first juror comparison with rewards. But otherwise, Rocky is being criticized by Edgardo that he's too harsh. Whenever he's saying jokes, they don't come off as jokes because he's saying it weirdly, I don't know, but he's too harsh and criticizes everything that everybody is doing. And the boys just are out on him. They turn on him and he's got to go.
Yeah. Rocky. Wow. My God. All right. He is, I don't even know what to say. So Fiji is a wild kind of season here. Right. This cat, they're just all over the place. And this is a season famously composed of pretty much all recruits except for Papa Smurf. So nobody really had a grasp on what the previous seasons were like. Like, it was kind of like watching everybody figure it out again for the first time. And I guess in a way, now we get the same thing here again, where we get pre-mergers on the jury. I think this is the only two times that we do this. We get Island of the Idols.
Well, yeah. Also HVV.
Oh, yes, and Heroes versus Villains.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
One season.
Never mind that.
rewind. Yeah.
Rocky is a chaotic presence, right? He's a chaotic character, and he sets a tone from, like, episode one on, like, how he wants his tribe to go and, you know, going against Anthony and all that, you know. So, yeah, he's very vocal.
He literally screams in his final words. It's like, ah, I was blindsided and I'm pissed. I'm like, whoa, he comes in hot with his final words. Like, he is just so outlandish. And to have him as the first juror, like, you see a lot of seasons now of who do we want as our first juror? And if they knew the jury was starting here, Rocky would not have been at this point. Maybe they flip Lisey here, or they try and take out Rocky earlier or something.
Well, you don't want Lisey as the first juror either. I mean, I don't even know what you want.
Who's better, Rocky or Lisey?
Rocky, 100%.
Okay.
Lisey asked Rocky for Cassandra's water shoes.
We'll get to Rocky's jury.
How many zeros are in a million?
That's true.
Lisey is the worst juror of all time.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna rewind now.
Okay. Sometimes you just have to talk these things out, you know.
Rocky's so interesting because he is someone who, again, this is someone who didn't, if I recall correctly, was never on. I should probably double check before I say this. He was never on the tribe with anyone other than Dreams, right?
He wasn't with
Dreams. No, he was with Earl for...
He was with Earl for the...
And he was with Mookie.
Are you talking about the finalists?
Mookie's not a finalist.
Oh, finalists. Yeah. Sorry. I thought you were talking about in Ravu.
No. In the finalists. So I think, like, he's so fascinating because he's kind of, like, turned on by Dreams here, right? Dreams, in this episode where he's going out, Dreams seems to be his only chance, but he doesn't know that he's his only chance to really stay alive here because Mookie is kind of batting for him. But so I think he holds that a little bit because Rocky seems like the type of person who would hold a grudge. And then he also seems like the type of person who wouldn't vote for a woman to win the game.
It's possible. It's possible. He's one of the better jurors this season.
Which is so bad.
But when you see the way he talks to Cassandra,
it's just, and I actually think his jury question feels really loaded. Like it does. You read his jury question, which is like he asked them who the biggest, like I'm the biggest kicker because, right? Like this idea of like what's the best, like how did you manipulate everyone?
Mm-hmm.
It feels very loaded. It feels like he's trying to set them up to fail.
And he wants it phrased in a very specific way. So he doesn't want whatever Cassandra is trying to do. She's just out now because she couldn't do it. So then he pivots to the next juror, and they're able to articulate it the way he wants it to. I want to say it's Earl. And then he's basically like, see, Cassandra, that's how it's supposed to go. All right, next, dreams. And so he is one of those snap jurors of, you didn't do what I say, I'm in charge. You're out now. Goodbye. Moving on. And I hate those jurors that just don't give the other people time to speak or, you know, want it phrased in a certain way. Otherwise, I'm not going to let you to continue to voice your opinion here. So, yeah, his final tribal council speech isn't the best, but it is a decent question if someone else asked it.
It would be. And if they let
people speak.
Answer, yeah.
Yeah. If someone else besides Rocky did this, if Yao Man was just like, how did you manipulate the best?
I just feel like manipulate has such a negative connotation to it.
Yeah.
And I think it is that choice of word which makes me really kind of disgusted by this question. I think this is a question that is to demonstrate all of these people are slime bags. And I don't like that. It's a very bitter question, not to reveal anything about later, but it comes off as a very disingenuous question and not one that you are trying to. This isn't, like I said, like I like reflective questions. This isn't a reflective question. This is a question of like, why did you hurt me?
Because he leaves pissed off and angry. He didn't see it coming. He got smacked in the mouth with a cinder block. Hopes nobody gets the million thanks to him.
Exactly.
That's his final word.
It's literally, he's putting in a throwaway question.
Yeah. Well, it's seven.
Perhaps. I think this is, you did say, John, that manipulate is a loaded word or has a negative connotation to it. And it especially was true in this season because the Dreams Yao Man deal really loomed large in the minds of the jury. And even though that was a good move by Dreams, the jury really disliked it. Like they, or I should say, hated it. Yes, he was beloved. This is one of the most bitter juries of all time. If you see everybody else's questions, it's insane.
Do you think that stems from these first two jurors? Like, do you think Rocky and Lisi being the first two jurors is why this remains such a bitter jury?
I don't. Maybe because
it doesn't help that they're the first two jurors, that's for sure. Like,
it's very drastically different than having Michelle Yee as your first juror.
It doesn't help the jury not be bitter with these two being the first ones.
I guess that's the only question, because having Michelle Yee be the first juror doesn't change anything. Like, Earl gets all the votes from everybody in the whole season,
set a different tone.
It still could set a different tone. Yeah, absolutely. Because Michelle and Earl were super tight.
And Michelle's just a genuinely nice person.
Yes, and she's going to set a positive tone.
Yeah.
But when you have people like, I mean, Alex and, you know, Alex and Mookie.
Alex is betrayed, always going to be that, you know, that direct.
Yeah. Betrayed by Dreams, right? Then you have Rocky. Relied on Dreams. Dreams didn't come through for him. Then you have Yao Man. Then Boo is bitter at Dreams for no apparent reason. Yeah. So I think it all kind of fed into that, where it's like, oh, you know what? Yeah, we also don't like Dreams. Yeah, Cassandra, she didn't do anything. Like, when you have two negative people to start the jury, it starts to become like, I don't know, a cesspool. I don't know if that's a bad, but you know what I mean? It's like a breeding ground for negativity and bitterness.
It festers.
It festers. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So Rocky, bitter juror.
Yes, bland. Obviously.
He's bland. Bland.
Very
bitter.
Basic.
This is the most bitter juror we have ever had in Survivor history.
What? Juror or jury?
Jury.
Yes. Oh, jury. I was like, Lex exists.
Oh, jury.
But, yeah.
And I do kind of credit it to the first two jurors in this case. I think that they can just like fester there and make it worse.
All right. Let's go to China. We have Jamie as our first boot here. First juror. And this is interesting the way this episode is structured. We have a lot of pre-merge action before we get to the merge, because it didn't feel like a lot of the other episodes had that, because there was merge boots and then the first juror. But Amy is here and she is the merge boot and the first juror. And so we get some pre-merge sprinklings in here. And this is where James finds one of his two idols. Jamie is the one who does the bag search. And she is what Amanda is saying is the silent leader of Jeonhu.
I think that's an accurate statement from Amanda. I do think, because she's kind of, you know, she's close with Eric. They have their thing. And then, you know, her and PG were, you know, they're the ones that really threw that challenge. So Jamie is a lot more of an integral figure than you might realize, I think. She's kind of somewhat of a forgotten character. Not totally, but, you know, not a super memorable one. But she does have a lot going on in this episode. This episode really is a lot about her, with the finding the fake idol, going through James's bag. Yeah, the silent leader. I'm not as dumb as I look. So Jamie, I don't know. She really is like a pivotal part in this.
And they cook up the plan of like, let's vote for John Robert. Even though he's on the bottom of Fei Long, I think we could get numbers to actually vote him out. And then let's play the next round, whatever we can do the next round, but let's just maybe go for John Robert. We can maybe get Courtney in with us, who then loops Frosty back in with us, who, you know, can pull in a James, hopefully sticks by us. So even though they're not confident at all in James, but it's just a possibility of something that could happen. And the plan of voting John Robert out here is really the right move and really pivotal.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to with Jamie and why Jamie's positioning in this is so fascinating is, again, like, she's the merge boot, which is really important. And you kind of have to like look into the context of what was going on in that season beforehand, right? Jamie and PG were really running the Jeonhu tribe. Like they were running it, and they were very much in tandem running it. They, you know, threw the challenge to get rid of Aaron, which made it so James totally wouldn't work without the merge, but that's fine. And I think her position here is like this strategic person, like approaching the game in a strategic way and going up against this small alliance within a larger alliance that we have in China, makes it so that her positioning really does matter, I think, in arguably like one of the most competitive final threes we've ever had in Survivor.
And the first line of her final words is, I learned that I'm probably too nice for the game of Survivor. And I don't think that's totally true. She might have had some moral dilemmas throughout the game that were kind of eating her up. Maybe the challenge throw is like, man, I really shouldn't have done that. I don't like that I did that. I don't know, but she plays the game hard, and I don't think she plays it timidly with the, "Oh, I'm just trying to be nice to people here." She doesn't, she's not like Leslie, where Leslie is like just this, you know, nice older lady. Jamie here is like ready to play the game, and it shows that, you know, she is ready and here and present, but her final words don't lend to that, which I don't know if she feels any different after watching the game of like, you actually weren't that bad.
Yeah, I don't know if she was like leaning into her own archetype, where it's like her archetype seems like someone who's not going to play the game like super hard.
The bubbly blonde.
The bubbly blonde, like the young girl, like they're, you know, like she said, "I'm not as dumb as I look." Like in her mind, she's not supposed to be this smart. So maybe she's just like believing that herself, like, "Oh, I'm just this nice girl. Like I'm too nice." But yeah, she plays hard. She goes to Todd and she's like, "Todd, I know who has the idols. Like keep me around and I'll tell you."
Which would be good if Todd didn't have all of the information.
Yes. Unfortunately, she was going up against a force in Todd. But yeah, Jamie was underrated, and going through this, it reminded me, I think that she was a really solid player.
But I think with all of that, it kind of all goes to the wayside for me with her final tribal council. Whatever she had going on there, she tries to talk to Courtney and is like, "All right, we're airing out dirty laundry. I don't want anything sugar-coated. Courtney, why would we be disappointed? What would we be disappointed to know about Todd's game?" And Courtney can't really answer the question to Jamie's liking. Same as Cassandra. Jamie cuts her off and is like, "All right, Todd, throw Courtney under the bus." And now I'm thinking, like, shouldn't she ask Todd about Amanda and then about Courtney, you know, so it works? But no, we're going to double down on Courtney. After Todd answers that, she then goes to Amanda to be like, "Why does Courtney suck?" And then it sprinkles in a little bit of like, "Why does Todd suck too?" And then like right at the end goes back to Todd. It's just like so much more chaotic and mean-spirited than this quote unquote too nice for the game of Survivor.
This was the David Murphy speech before the David Murphy speech. It really, like, you would never think that Jamie would ask this type of question, right? Yeah. But that she does, like, she is a very clearly trying to give Todd the game here. Like, this is like you said, she's trying to play the game that Todd was trying to play, but Todd did it and she couldn't do it, and she wants to vote for that. But yeah, it is so blatant, very blatant, where, yeah, she's like, oh, so Courtney, so you're saying Todd did everything? Is that what I'm hearing? You think Todd said, Todd, we must go back to you. What do you have to say about this? Like, please tell me everything.
Now that you've heard Amanda's response, do you want to say anything to justify all that?
Oh, and then one more time for good measure. Courtney, you remember, you suck, right? Like, we don't like you. So, yeah, this was a crazy question.
Better until this question, and now it's total bitter. I feel like it has to be.
It's so hard to evaluate because we don't see a lot of interaction between her, Courtney, and Amanda. Like, there's clearly something we're missing here as to why she's, like, so enamored with Todd,
Kingpin, maybe.
Maybe. Like, that
front runner of the Alliance, and then why aren't you guys better?
Kind of. And maybe this is also just a response to how Amanda is, like, performing at Tribal Council, too. Because it feels, and we've been talking about the idea of like the proxy in the final tribal council a lot today, and it feels like Jamie's proxy in this final tribal council should be Amanda. Amanda should be the one that she relates to the most, who played the game most similar to her. But she puts it on Todd instead, and I'm not 100% sure based on the edit what that means. Like, I don't understand why she gets this way. I don't understand how she gets It feels like her as a juror feels more like a character than she ever did in the game.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are that way. It's like, where did Dan Limbo? It's like, what? Yeah. Weird reference, but It's like, where did you come from? Right. As like you've got a personality all of a sudden. I do think she was against Courtney. Cause like we were saying, like she was trying to pull Courtney over and maybe she's bitter at Courtney because of that. I also think that just maybe sometimes people just don't click. Like Courtney is she's a New York
attitude.
Yeah. Like Courtney, we know Amanda didn't have a good final tribal. I don't think Courtney had a great one either, especially with someone like Jamie, like a Southern blonde gal with like a New Yorker. Like, I don't know. Those two, their personalities just didn't click.
Just like JT and Steven. He's not going to
like exactly like JT and Steven.
John, do you have any more final thoughts about Jamie here? Do we agree that she might be a bitter juror here? Do we think she's a basic juror because of the balance?
I think we kind of have to go bitter here because she's definitely not better. She's not enhancing the game at all. Even like with her Todd stumping, I don't think it really changes anyone's opinion here at all as to who's voting for Todd and who's not voting for Todd. And even like her gameplay doesn't reflect how this jury question goes. So we have to just judge her as a juror. And I don't think the other thing is like, because of the way that the vote goes in this season, like, I don't think Jamie has that much influence on this jury either. Right. I think if you look at like the votes that Todd's getting, he's getting those votes anyways. I think like the surprising one is that he gets Frosty's vote.
Yeah.
But other than that, like these other three votes he gets from Jean Robert, who he, you know, just jury manages really well when they blindside him, and in Final Tribal Council, PG and Jamie, who just like acknowledge him as like the ringleader of everything. I don't think there was any change really happening here with Jamie, and I don't think she was really influencing this jury either way.
Yeah, even if it was a tie and Frosty voted for Courtney, let's say, like, Courtney's voting or Amanda's voting for Todd to win, right? If it was a tie either way, they're both voting for Todd to win. So,
yeah, I mean, because she could share that pizza with two people and she was like, no, just Todd. So, well, we don't have any speculations for China. So unless you guys have anything else to say, we'll wrap things up.
Yeah. Sorry, Flicka, for the stray. I didn't mean it.
All right, John, what do we got going on in the Specialist Universe?
Well, you heard us talking Guatemala to China today. You'll hang in there tomorrow and you'll hear Phil and Once Upon an Island talk about the winners of these seasons tomorrow and their winning games. That'll be really fun. Tegwith is still doing one more China. Tegwith doing her China rewatch. So tune in for that. And we are less than 2 weeks away from our series on ranking the winners of Survivor. That should be really fun. It was not fun making those lists. So it'll be very fun discussing said lists, I'm sure. Other than that, head over to the Patreon because we have lots of content going on there. Every Season Matters still trucking along and all those other shows. So much stuff happening on the Patreon. You can join the discussion. I think that's something we really need to emphasize a bit more. Join the discussion because we have a Discord there where lots of people talk all the time. So become a patron so you can join that community and talk to other Survivor fans.
Yes, and I'll get the correct guest. Phil is joining us next week. Now that I haven't done math this episode, Phil is joining us next week so he can tear Parvati down just a little bit more. So we will see you next week with another episode of Bitter or Better. Goodbye.